It's Wednesday, July 21st. Does it ever feel like two shots don't get you what they used to? We start here. As COVID infections mount, we also appear to be seeing more cases among the fully vaccinated.
We have to remember that vaccines are not 100%.
We asked the former head of the CDC if he thinks it's time to put a mask back on. People were worried the Olympics would be a petri dish, but you couldn't cancel them now, could you?
One by one, they are distancing themselves from these Olympic Games.
What happens when the deepest pockets in Japan cut and run? And it's the one guy Google didn't want hired.
He's represented smaller companies in lawsuits against Google.
Why a new move from the White House has prompted a big panic for big tech. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
I remember, unfortunately, two patients dying in this room.
Sure.
And there's so many memories tied to each area that it was hard for me to come to grips that we're back.
This is Matt Robinson. He's a nurse in Memphis who's been in charge of his hospital's COVID wing since last spring. It has 16 beds. Well, that's not enough anymore.
Since 6 o'clock this morning, I've been downstairs prepping our new COVID unit. It's got 48 beds because the unit back here has 16, and we far exceeded that capacity.
He says the Delta variant is sweeping through surrounding towns at an escalating rate. And it's not just Tennessee, of course.
In Florida, one hospital system raising its COVID threat to high after seeing its hospitalizations more than double in the past 2 weeks.
Which makes you think, okay, clearly the problem is not enough people are vaccinated. Get people vaccinated, the virus stops spreading. Except that doesn't necessarily explain this.
In Washington tonight, some fully vaccinated staffers from the White House to Speaker Pelosi's office have now tested positive.
These range from White House aides to a Nancy Pelosi aide to some of the Texas state senators who held meetings at the Capitol recently. And all of the people I just mentioned say they're fully vaccinated.
Health officials told the board most of the 132 cases reported so far involve visitors from Boston and beyond who came to Provincetown around the 4th of July.
Meanwhile, in Provincetown, Massachusetts, an outbreak of cases prompted a new mask mandate. Officials say at worst, most of these people are just showing mild symptoms, but the vast majority of their positive cases there are fully vaccinated people.
The overwhelming majority of deaths from COVID-19 are now occurring in unvaccinated people.
And so yesterday on Capitol Hill, Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the head of the CDC, faced scrutiny from Congress, answering a simple question a lot of Americans would like to ask them themselves. How much risk are we actually facing here? Let's check in with someone who knows what it's like to face questions like this. Dr. Tom Frieden is the former director of the CDC. He now heads the nonprofit Resolve to Save Lives. And Dr. Frieden, I mean, thanks for being with us, but straight up, like, how concerned should we be here about breakthrough infections?
We have to remember that vaccines are not 100%. When we say these vaccines provide great protection, they do. But it's not perfect protection. And that means that some people who are vaccinated are going to get infected. And because there are now well over 100 million Americans fully vaccinated, they're going to be fully vaccinated people who, as the Delta variant spreads and there are high levels of disease in community, are going to get breakthrough infections.
When you talk about breakthrough infections, that the original data from the clinical trial, the efficacy data, was based on preventing clinically apparent disease, not preventing infection such as asymptomatic infection.
Most of those will be mild. Some of them will undoubtedly be less mild. Some end up in hospitalization and in very rare cases could end up in death, particularly with somebody who has an underlying health condition. That doesn't change the underlying reality, which is that vaccination is the best way to protect ourselves from COVID.
So when you hear about a breakthrough infection, that doesn't necessarily mean the vaccine is failing, because it's still holding true, particularly with regard to protection against severe disease leading to hospitalization and deaths.
But it's not perfect.
And so is the rise you mentioned, like, is that a perception thing where, hey, there's more vaccinated adults, so cases are going to seem like they're rising because there's just more vaccinated people out there? Or are we seeing a rise in those types of things because of something like the Delta variant?
Well, what's happening now is that there are three times more cases in the U.S. than there were a month ago. So I think we will see breakthroughs. What I would like to see that we're not yet seeing is really good information about what we call in public health the risk factors for breakthrough. So is it people who were vaccinated a long time ago and there was waning immunity? We don't have any evidence of that, but that would be important to know. In fact, there's nothing that suggests that so far, but that's something to look for over time.
In addition, there are individuals who are immunosuppressed, people who are on cancer chemotherapy, a variety of other individuals, transplant individuals, who may actually need a boost as part of their initial regimen in the sense of getting them up to the point where they are protected.
If we know that, then we can advise people how to best protect themselves.
But say you're vaccinated, maybe you got some sniffles, maybe you've been around somebody who recently tested positive. You go in and get tested, and you test positive. You're fully vaccinated, but you've tested positive. What are you supposed to do next? Because, I mean, I was kind of surprised to learn that the CDC doesn't necessarily recommend you go into some two-week lockdown.
This is an issue that probably needs to be looked at carefully as we get more information. And if I can just step back and make a broader comment.
Sure.
The best responses to public health challenges adapt based on data. And I know that's frustrating for people because people want absolute answers. But really, if you look at the very best programs ever run in public health, they were constantly adapting because as we learn more, we learn how to protect people better.
CDC's new guidance also recommends that fully vaccinated people do not need quarantine or get tested following a known exposure to someone with COVID-19 as long as they are asymptomatic.
If you're living with someone who's at high risk of serious illness, you need to be very careful around that person. And certainly, if you are testing positive, even if it's after vaccination, you should not be exposing that person because they could become severely ill.
Are you trying to tell me that we should be wearing more masks? Because that was my next question. I mean, should we be wearing, we're seeing this at more offices now, just over the last few days, offices saying, actually, even if you're vaccinated, please wear a mask. Is that what we should be doing?
There are a couple things going on with masks. Unfortunately, they've been made into such a partisan issue.
And with the school year set to begin, the growing debate tonight, should everyone in schools be wearing masks, given the millions of school children 12 and under who aren't eligible for a vaccine yet?
Even if COVID didn't exist, it would be a good idea for us to wear masks more than we do, as they do in East Asia, because cases are rising. There are certain circumstances in which masking may well make sense. First off, you have to ask who, what, and where. Who are you? If you are immunosuppressed, even if you've been vaccinated, you probably want to wear a mask if you're in a really crowded place. Second,
that's to protect yourself.
That's even to protect yourself.
Right.
Second, what you're doing. If you're in an enclosed space with rising case counts and the facility says everyone should wear masks, there's no practical way to know who's vaccinated and who's not. So everyone should wear a mask in that setting. And it's also about where you are. So again, if you're in a community that has a lot of COVID, then that community may decide that they're going to mask because that is the safest thing to do for people. It is a little puzzling to me why there's such opposition to masks, because masks are actually our way of doing more things that we'd like to do.
All right, really valuable perspective here from a former head of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. Good speaking.
Next up on Start Here, congrats, you get a gold medal in avoidance, the no-show that could reshape the Olympics after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
So if we're seeing concern here in the U.S. just on a normal Wednesday morning, imagine what it's like in Japan right now.
We can't really change the fact that we're going to do the Olympics.
Where tens of thousands of foreigners are arriving, each potentially bringing variants with them to a country that is way less vaccinated than ours.
And I feel like we're not fully prepared for it.
We've talked about how controversial the Olympics have been within Tokyo, but this reached a new level yesterday. ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman is there. And James, I mean, if this is all about money, well, even the money people seem to have second thoughts about this.
Yeah, follow the money, Brad. That's the key here, and it is going out of the door. I mean, these are the most expensive Olympics ever, the most sponsored Olympics ever. Something like 60 local corporate sponsors here in Japan alone have put together something like $3 billion for these Olympics. But one by one, they are distancing themselves from these Olympic Games. And they are huge Japanese names.
I feel the entire planet is like an Olympic stadium, sharing the passion. Panasonic.
We're talking Panasonic, Fujitsu.
Toyota, proud partner of Team USA.
Toyota, massive, massive deal for Toyota to do this.
Wow.
Look, certain things they're doing, they're trying to do to put on a brave face and kind of react to national sentiment.
68% of respondents in an Asahi newspaper poll expressed doubt about the ability of Olympic organisers to control coronavirus infections.
So not sending their CEOs to the opening ceremony, for instance. A lot of the companies are not doing that because they say, well, spectators aren't allowed to go, so we don't want to be seen to be benefiting. But Toyota is also cancelling all their Olympic-related advertising. That is a huge thing to happen. And so I think that just shows how they're looking at this long term and seeing that national feeling is against these games. There's also a sense that money forced these games to go ahead. So Toyota and others are kind of thinking to themselves, well, we don't want people to think that, so we're going to pull.
And that's interesting, James, because I would think that that CEOs aren't showing up because they don't want to get COVID. But you're saying it's more of a PR thing. And that even more than that, they just think it'll be risky to be associated with these games publicly ever again.
100%. And the numbers of people getting COVID or having to isolate at these games, you know, that is not making it easy on these sponsors at all.
There's also another push by the International Olympic Committee to get these athletes to follow the mask mandate and COVID rules. This after we learned from an IOC source that athletes from the US and Europe haven't all been social distancing or wearing masks in public spaces.
At the moment, the number is around 71 people who've tested positive inside the Olympic bubble. And the numbers on Team USA are going up as well. And it's hitting all the huge medaling events.
Women's basketball player Katie Lou Samuelson revealed that she's tested positive, and Zach LaVine is not traveling to Tokyo with the rest of the men's basketball team out of an abundance of caution.
But Kara Aker has tested positive. She's an alternate on the U.S. gymnastics team. We know about Coco Gauff, of course, for the tennis.
Al Fong, who coaches both Aker and the other gymnast in isolation, speaking to GMA overnight.
They checked the distance from bed to bed. They checked to see that they had masks on all the time. We all took precautions.
So in just about every way, not just for the United States, but a lot of countries now, seeing their athletes either go down with COVID or have to be isolated. And that is what might derail these games.
But and that's my last question for you. Is there an actual chance that they would derail or can't? Like, they're not going to cancel them now, right? Like, forget Friday. Some of the competitions have already started. Are we just in this now?
I don't know, you know, never say never.
So what happened if the infection were to spread further?
Well, I think when that happens, we have to fully consult.
The CEO of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics was asked this question, and he said, well, conversations are ongoing. I mean, that doesn't really fill you with confidence, does it?
Conversations are ongoing. When were they? When are they going to go till?
When are you going to stop having the conversations and make a decision? Yeah, and right. And so they've got this thing called the Five-Party Council, and it's between the IOC, the local Tokyo municipality, the Japanese government, and local organizing groups. If, Brad, you hear about the Five-Party Council being convened, it's time to worry, because that's the moment where they get together and say, hang on a minute, we really can't move forward with these things.
Wow.
I don't think we'll see the whole Olympics get cancelled in one fell swoop, but we might start to see some events maybe get postponed or cancelled or pared down. They might decide that they won't use the Olympic Village anymore, and they might just put people in lots of different hotels. I mean, there are all kinds of mitigating things they can do. But fundamentally, the Japanese authorities, I think it's slowly dawning on them.
How can we make the games successful? How can we make the games something that will be acceptable to the people?
Just maybe how huge the opposition to these games is.
This is indeed a true test.
You can almost hear this dawning realization in the voices of these officials. Like, oh no, we're here. What do we do? We'll see what happens. James Longman, they're in Tokyo. Thanks so much.
No problem.
One big storyline to keep your eye on today is how Congress is going to handle one of the Biden administration's most important priorities.
We should be united in one thing: passage of the bipartisan infrastructure framework, which we shook hands on.
Today, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to hold a vote that is really more of a technicality than anything. It would open debate on a huge infrastructure package that has allegedly been agreed to in principle by a bunch of Democrats and GOP lawmakers.
This is not a deadline that determines every final detail of the bill, not close to it.
Only thing is, Republicans say they're not going to give Schumer his yes votes. Not yet, anyway.
We're not going to the bill until we know what the bill is.
So the question today is whether this whole bipartisan exercise over the last month is just kind of dead, which obviously would have a huge impact on average Americans. Well, yesterday, the Biden administration also made a few other decisions that could in turn have huge impacts on how Americans use the internet.
President Biden is nominating Jonathan Cantor to lead the antitrust division at the Department of Justice.
ABC's Elizabeth Schulze is here. She covers economics and tech policy. And Elizabeth, the big news in your world yesterday was essentially this new guy dealing with monopolies in the country really doesn't like Google very much.
That's right, Brad. Well, this is a major nomination when we are talking about the market power of tech giants like Google, like Amazon and Apple. So the White House nominated this longtime antitrust lawyer. He's named Jonathan Cantor to lead the Department of Justice's antitrust division. So essentially, he would be in charge of overseeing policies, dealing with monopolies, dealing with questions about competition at a time when we are hearing growing calls to break up some of these really big tech companies.
Federal prosecutors accusing Google of being a monopoly gatekeeper for the internet.
The Justice Department is currently suing Google. We know that he would be essentially coming in to oversee that effort.
Google handles nearly 90% of what Americans are searching for on the internet.
As Google got more market power, it started taking more of the page, removing it from unbiased results, and instead including biased results that essentially you have to buy.
And Cantor has been a vocal critic of Google for years. He's represented smaller companies in lawsuits against Google, for example.
You're paying not to be demoted. And it feels a little bit like a racket, and that's what's happening.
What's really interesting is he is not the only critic of big tech that's making their way into the government agencies right now.
The agencies have been a little slow to catch up to the underlying business realities and the empirical realities of how these markets work.
This is after the White House named a very high-profile critic named Lina Khan to lead the FTC. That's the Federal Trade Commission.
Section 230 assumes that these companies are kind of neutral intermediaries, but I think what we're seeing is that these companies are, in fact, not neutral intermediaries. They already do a lot to, you know, discriminate effectively. And so I think what we need is a regime that kind of brings the power and the responsibility these companies have in line with the legal obligations.
And between the Department of Justice and the FTC, those are really the two main agencies overseeing competition policy. This could mark a big shift in how they're going to approach action against these big tech companies.
Wow. So wait, the Cantor guy that you mentioned, he has literally been parts of groups that have sued Google. you'd mentioned breaking up big tech. Is that like a real possibility here? What is the worst case scenario for big tech companies as they watch these potential hires?
Well, breaking up these big tech companies, that would be really the most extreme antitrust action these regulators could take.
Facebook is seeking the recusal of FTC Chair Lina Khan as the agency determines whether to file a new antitrust case against the social giant after a judge rejected the FTC's previous complaint.
For Facebook, for example, there's been this idea of spinning off Instagram or WhatsApp, businesses that could be really standalone companies outside of the original Facebook brand. For Google, there's an idea maybe to spin off YouTube.
Facebook is arguing that Khan, who has written extensively about how antitrust laws should be applied to tech giants, can't be impartial.
This is already an idea that's out there to break up these companies. It's something that's a lot of big tech kind of critics have suggested. And then the other route would be, for example, fines. This is something that the European Union has already done.
Today, the Commission has decided to fine Google 4.34 billion euros.
So the question the regulators are really dealing with is, how do you change these companies' business models? And does it mean that they need to be broken up because they just have too much market power right now?
It is time to break up America's tech giants.
One other push we're also seeing is just for legislation that would actually require companies to break up, would require them to share their data. You know, pretty radical changes to these tech platforms. It has surprisingly a lot of bipartisan support under the general assumption that these companies just have gotten too big.
Well, that's the thing. This latest appointment you mentioned would have to still be confirmed by the Senate. And in the past, you might think the Biden administration is going to run into opposition from, you know, pro-business Republicans or maybe Democrats that represent big tech areas. But for various reasons, neither side has a ton of love for big tech right now, which could just have huge ramifications for how these companies operate in the years to come. Good thing to keep your eye on. Elizabeth Schulze, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
All right, we're going to take a real quick break, but when we return, Jeff Bezos was only up in the air for 11 minutes. Some activists are saying he really should have just stayed up there. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. I'm lucky in that if I take a 15-minute bike ride, I can get a crisp, clear look at the Statue of Liberty on a given morning, except yesterday.
We've gotten pictures from viewers with that red dot of a sun in the morning to this hazy picture of the New York City sunrise, which was pretty incredible.
That's yesterday, New York Harbor was wrapped in, well, it wasn't fog, it was smoke. In fact, it was smoke that had traveled 3,000 miles.
This was disturbing here today. Can you imagine what they're dealing with out west?
This is how big some of these western wildfires have become. They're being experienced on the other side of the country.
This is one of the clams that didn't fare well in the heat.
Meanwhile, in Washington state, some people have reported getting sick from shellfish because they've essentially been cooking in hot ocean waters. All of this was on the mind of some people yesterday.
Let's light this candle.
As they watched this.
What?
Jeff Bezos' private rocket ship taking an all-civilian crew, with him his brother and the youngest and oldest people to become astronauts to travel to space.
The magic of the Blue Origin rocket launch yesterday was not just that it went to the edge of space. It wasn't just that Jeff Bezos himself was on board.
Greatest day ever.
It was the idea that space tourism is on the cusp of becoming way more mainstream. In the next few years, you're likely to see a ton more of these launches. Well, each of them puts about 300 tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. 300 tons. For reference, an airplane flight across the Atlantic emits 2 tons. And we're about to do more of these.
We had been briefed on it, but it's something else entirely to actually feel your skin get pulled back and get pushed into the chair.
Scientists say airplanes still do way more damage to the environment now because there are so many of them. But space flights, which are increasing, emit carbon into the upper atmosphere, which can linger for 2 or 3 years. Bezos has made it a point to say that Blue Origin is greener than their competitors and that the trails you see behind their rockets are actually just water vapor. But even that creates clouds that ordinarily would not exist, which triggers a reaction damaging the ozone layer. all this causes climate activists to ask, shouldn't the world's richest man be devoting his treasure not to look down on his planet, but to fix what's there down below? Bezos has a main focus of his foundation going forward will be halting climate change. Well, buddy, you got some work to do. It took 15 years to get this rocket in the air. The Earth might need help a lot sooner than that. Hey, if you know anyone who needs something to listen to on their commute, their car ride, their bike ride, maybe they took a rocket ship to work, I don't know, tell them about the show. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.